Hello, and welcome to CRO Insights, How CROs Win, the podcast that uncovers the key markers of successful revenue leadership, brought to you by the CRO Collective in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. In each episode, we'll explore the CRO career path, the major challenges facing CROs today, and discover strategies for building aligned revenue engines that scale your company's growth. All right. Well, thank you, Grania, for being here. So I just wanted to get, where are you? I know you're not in the U.S.
I'm not in the U.S. I'm currently in Dublin, Ireland, but I split my time between Paris, France and Dublin, Ireland.
Beautiful. Oh, God. What two nice places to be spending your time
from. They're not bad. I'm reasonably lucky.
Could be worse, right? Could be worse. Yeah. I mean, I have people get on with me sometimes and they're like, well, I spend my time between Tulsa and Oklahoma and, you know, Des Moines, you know. Well, sorry to hear that.
I'm sure they're lovely places, but Paris is reasonably good.
But, you know, Paris and Dublin, I mean, come on. I think anybody would. So let's do a little formal intro here. I'd love to, if you could, just tell listeners your background. You are a chief revenue officer. The framework from which, you know, we'd like to talk about this on the CRO Insights podcast is just sort of like not just the role you have, but how it is implemented, the role is implemented, the way in which your company utilizes that role. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
And I think that's a really interesting question. I talk a lot, even internally, about the role of the CRO and as it evolves and how it's understood and how it's different across companies. So my role, I'm Chief Revenue Officer for Aqualad Group. We are a company that specializes in removing language and tech barriers. So in our organization, I'm responsible for revenue, solutions, pre-sales, marketing, RevOp, sales op, sales excellence, and sales academy. So pretty much the revenue engine, including what we sell and what we don't sell and why and what the market conditions are for driving the evolution of our offering. So it's a cross-functional role. I collaborate very, very closely and daily with our CTO from a technology perspective, with our operations teams, with our field teams, in terms of the end-to-end of a customer experience, what their primary business objectives are, how our solutions and offerings help, how they solve those things, and how we build the today and the tomorrow in an age of AI to solve problems. So I hope that helps.
It is. So you're like the, I would call the true chief revenue officer. You've got the job. You're the strategic leader. You're running things. You know, you're in charge of all things revenue. So I guess a couple of questions that come from that are you the company's, your company's first CRO?
No.
Second. So they had one, so they have it for. So was it, in your view, without, I'm curious, because it's interesting to me, the iteration of this, was it that there were some mistakes made and you were like the fix? Or was it like how did they evolve? Like, you know, I usually see companies have two CROs. It's usually like the first one sort of didn't work out. It's never black and white thing where it was someone's fault.
No, it's definitely not. I think the way I look at it is the first iteration was right for the point of time in our company. So the first CRO had a lot of great skills from a tech stack perspective for an implementation of the technology that was needed to drive a sales ops engine forward, but perhaps not in hindsight the expertise for the industry that we were in. So I have a very, very strong 2-decade-plus background in our industry, which makes it somewhat easier for me to understand the competitive landscape, the client needs, the client problems and challenges, how they're evolving, how they're impacted, which when you think about a cross-functional role, a lot of people can do revenue or rev ops or sales ops or build a tech stack, but truly deeply understanding the industry you're in and what you're building with your company and your teams to solve those problems requires an industry depth that I possessed that was perhaps missing in iteration number one.
Yeah, it makes sense. I get it. So, you know, I talk a lot about stages, like at what point in a company's growth should they bring a chief revenue officer on?
It's a really good question.
Because a lot of times it's not the right stage, and that is a factor in its success. Yep. So what stage, where are you guys at right now, and where were you at that stage? Was that a factor? Again, from the context of my listeners learning about their own hiring of a CRO.
Yeah.
And also, if I'm looking for a job, what's the right environment for me to be looking at?
It's a really, really good question. And I think you can be too early or too late.
Yep.
So when you're too early, for me, it's often that you need sales. You think you need a chief revenue officer, but really you don't. You need to grow the day-to-day sales, the number of customers. If you're in a SaaS space, the monthly recurring revenue, the annual recurring revenue, you just need to get sales to hire the right sellers, to understand the right geographies, etc. It can be an early phase startup scale up where you need to get your sales engine organized. I think when you hit the fast growth or the acquisition and integration phase where you're evolving, for example, we acquired 10 plus companies in a number of years. So that required integration. It required alignment of offerings. It required removal of legacy tech debt. It required a very client-centric approach to the customer experience that we wanted to deliver with the power of everything that we had acquired. So what had we acquired and why had we acquired it in terms of geographic presence, in terms of skill sets, in terms of technology? So that was more than just sales. That was more than just go out and sell a product or a number of services. That required building an engine for repetition, predictability, continuity. It also, we're private equity backed. So we moved from being a private family business to a private equity backed growth driven engine. So that too requires a degree of predictability, a degree of maturity that the chief revenue officer helps come in and design from a, how are you building the engine? What are you doing? What are you investing in? What are you divesting of? What's your go-to-market strategy? What's your geographic strategy? What's your SaaS versus service? All of those things that require an evolving approach to your C-suite. And usually it's those things that trigger the need for a chief revenue officer. It's complexity, it's continuity, it's repeatability, predictability, and speed. It's usually speed. Get bigger faster, cope with industry change and disruption, competitive forces.
We are obviously on the same page. I guess my question then to you would be, you articulate those things very clearly. Why is it you think that companies still don't do that?
I think the role of the chief revenue officer is still reasonably misunderstood. So I hear even senior leaders in certain sectors talk about a chief sales officer and a chief revenue officer interchangeably. They are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. I see the breadth of things that a chief revenue officer needs to handle, from data-driven decisions to technology stack to sales processes to org to pre-sales, marketing, positioning, all of the things. It's very broad, and oftentimes companies struggle with where things should sit. So I think the understanding the role of a chief revenue officer in how they remove the blockers to revenue, accelerate and provide the engine, the structure, oil the wheels for a company to go forward in an aligned fashion, the more a company understands that and gets involved in understanding what chief revenue officers do, the easier it is. I was lucky. I had CEOs and boards that understood that role. So I was in a lucky position in that I didn't have to fight to describe what it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
There was an aligned expectation.
That is fortunate. I mean, most of my clients whom are in the aspirational track, right, they're pursuing the role. And matter of fact, I'm doing a webinar on this today, trying to provide aspirants, you know, heads of sales and marketing who want to become chief revenue officers on the precarious, you know, treacherous waters they're going to be approaching when they're looking for this role and the different ways that this role is going to be presented to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, having them be the ones who are the truth bearers so they can evaluate the roles from one place and one consciousness, as opposed to like, oh, okay, I guess this is the way they're going to do the job, so I'll do it that way. I think we sort of do need to create a little bit more integrity in the way, and I use the word integrity more like from a structural and architectural standpoint, not a moral or ethical one. You know, and in the integrity of, okay, I'm very clear on what this is, and I'm very clear on how it should be done. And so therefore, I'm going to go find companies that are in agreement with that, and then I'll do that, as opposed to, all right, I'll take whatever job they give me as long as it has that title. And I think that this is part of it. I think there is a bit of a loose relationship between these things that helps to keep that ambiguity present in the marketplace. And I want, like, for example, in the way I usually present this to somebody is say, okay, so let's say you were pursuing a chief marketing role. You're in the market for one, and you're looking at a bunch of job opportunities, and a number of them didn't even involve marketing. Would you want that job? I mean, probably not, right? You'd say, that's not a chief marketing officer. You're very clear on what that job is, and you'd be able to evaluate it. But because of the ambiguity, there's a bit of a collaborative ambiguity that's going on. And I think that this is sort of, you know, so that's where I think the marketplace is largely responsible in that.
Yeah. And candidates as well can be responsible in terms of, I'm calling myself a chief revenue officer because it sounds great and wonderful, and it's what I want to be. And suddenly there's a title without a true understanding of what it is you're taking on. So I think, like most things for me, it's understanding what you want to help a company achieve. It's understanding how you want to take them forward. And what are the elements you should influence or own or align on? And if you come at it from that perspective, I find it becomes much clearer and much more aligned with an executive team, with a private equity team, with a board, because it's very clear what they're holding you accountable for and that you're aligned. Whereas if it's coming from a candidate that says, but that title sounds amazing, I just want that title. And
exactly.
I'll tweak what I'm doing to be that title. It never works, not for the person, not for the org, not for the industry. And I think there was a lot, I saw a lot of chief growth officer, chief revenue officer, chief commercial officer. And I think the chief revenue officer and chief commercial officer are good, solid things. Yeah. They're very similar.
Yeah.
But it goes back to, what is it that you're trying to solve? And is it this remit with this cross-functional elements? A lot of sellers as well who aspire to be either chief sales officers or chief revenue officers, when they're growing into VP roles or SVP roles, still sometimes underestimate just how different the role and the remit you're taking on is. It's not the same. It's not just individually growing revenue or growing a region's revenue or growing a market's revenue. It's far beyond revenue, and it's every element that influences the success of that revenue and customer acquisition, customer retention, customer churn, new market openings, new solutions openings. So for me, it's the most amazing role in the world, because I like all of the elements that go into making up that vision. Because for me, it's influencing the vision for growth.
100%.
So, but not everybody loves that. So
no, I agree. It's not for everyone. It's definitely somebody needs to sort of be that type of person. There's a profile of someone who wants that job. And I think that, again, to kind of, you know, stick with that big theme we're on right now is, you know, someone who comes and largely, I don't know why, but I think it's just been the case that it's a predominantly sales-driven role, because a lot of people that come out of sales leadership roles to become chief revenue officers. And so there's sort of like this presumed track, you know, that you're on when you're on a sales role. And I think there's a lot of that, trying to find the right term. You know, there's, you know, when you're a head of sales, there is a
expectation that you jump to.
But there's also a heroic kind of badge on sales leaders. You know, someone who runs a sales organization and grows it and scales it and makes the company lots of top line revenue. You get a lot of pats on the back. You make a lot of money. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of media that's associated with that type of stuff. I mean, people don't talk about operational excellence in the magazines. They talk about, you know, how much money the company made last month, you know? And so there's just a lot more focus on that stuff, and it attracts more attention. It's rewarded. It's compensated. It's incentivized for good reasons. Yeah. But so if I'm a head of sales, I'm going to have a certain type of personality where I'm out there, you know, building sales organizations and all the stuff that goes with the sales organizations. And then I get moved into a CRO role. Naturally, those skill sets are going to become the predominant skill sets I'm going to execute in that role. And it's going to just kind of naturally become very much a sales driven role. So yeah, it's the profile of the person that needs to also be rethought. So that question could lead to the next question, which is, what do you think, given now your knowledge of this, what is the optimal profile for a chief revenue officer in the way you and I define one?
I think you definitely need that revenue passion. You need the sales track in your past in terms of growing regions and growing revenue, but you need more than that. You need the passionate unblocking of things along that career path, whether that was the cross-functional collaboration with technology because a product needed to be tweaked, and you saw it from a market perspective in terms of how this could unlock more revenue or grease the wheels to be faster. So you need that, at least in our industry, the tech passion and the tech understanding and the ability to collaborate well with what the market needs and what your technical CTO organization is building, that ability to ideate and have that. You need financial passion in terms of seeing and building what the ideal revenue profile for a company is in terms of segmentation, in terms of market, geography, solution services. It's almost like a holistic ability to go, here are all the ingredients that make up this amazing jigsaw picture on the box. That jigsaw picture is going to be our future. This is how we build it. This is how we evolve. So I think understanding the go-to-market strategy, again, customer-centric, coming from the customer side of things, the ability to engage with field sales teams, and to have them respect you because you've come from that space, you understand, having built parts of it. So I do think a revenue background is important, but also the ability to have conversations with your CFO in terms of the financial elements of an organization and how you're pricing and how you're tweaking things so that the profitability, the operational excellence can happen, the EBITDA can be realized, and your shareholders are delighted, not only top line, but top line enabling bottom line. The ability to be a strong partner in crime for your CEO and the C-suite that you're a part of, the colleagues that you cross-functionally align with, because every jigsaw piece in that C-suite makes up the success of your company. So it's not a standalone hero role for me. It's a vision, execution, alignment role for where the company is going and how we get there and how we remove blockers.
Yeah, so that's a very unique talent stack. You know, that's a lot of things. You know, it is. There aren't a lot of people who have all those things. It's, you know, it's not like you're going to go throw a rock into the street and hit a lot of people in the head that know that stuff. I mean, I could probably hit a lot of salespeople in the head.
I agree and I disagree, probably in reasonably equal measure.
Are you being being modest right now? Or
I hadn't thought about what I'm being right now. I guess my take is 50-50. So we've all come across people in our career that we've helped build or support as leaders who may have been, how shall I phrase this delicately, an absolute pain in the ass.
Yeah, for sure.
And the absolute But there's a difference between being a productive contributor, challenger.
100%, yeah.
And I think when we see those type of peoples in revenue orgs, in finance orgs, field orgs, they tend to have the characteristics that will have a vision, that will influence people, even if they're not initially in a position of leadership, and that can get things done and bring them all together. So I'm not saying it's easy. Don't get me wrong. It is not. It's not easy to find the right profile with the right skills and then add the industry that you're in, the talent in that, that adds an extra something. But I think if we're building profiles, you can see what is or is not conducive to cross-functional collaboration, to influence,
for sure. There's no doubt you can to getting things identify a DNA or a sort of character straight stack that, you know, there's no doubt. And I'm in agreement with you. I'm asking the question somewhat provocatively because I do see one of the problems which my clients have is it's both the ambiguity they have, their own misperceptions, which is a big problem.
And then how to select the right person who will get things done.
Exactly. And so sometimes I think that the default is, well, you know, I'm never going to find anybody that can do all that. So I'm just going to get someone that can do this. You know, there is a sort of a, I'll settle for this sort of thing. I don't know if it's actually articulated that way, but it just ends up happening.
Sometimes it's a fear thing as well. I can see it. And it goes back to the first question in my head that you asked, which is at what point is the right time to hire a CRO? Oftentimes the right point comes down to a founder, starter, scale up person reaching a point where maybe they've got a more professional executive team, leadership team, maybe they've got outside funding. And that brings fear because that CEO has sweated blood and tears to build a vision and a company that was his or hers to a certain point. Relinquishing some control is oftentimes why the first CRO may not work, and understanding what the partnership and trusting that somebody, A, through skin in the game, B, through connection and alignment, wants the same thing as you for the next phase of your journey, whether that's to grow, to build, to exit, to whatever that is at the phase of your journey that it is. I think that trust and that fear is sometimes what makes it hard. And I think there's a third element. We talked about the skill sets and finding the right person. I think there's also a cultural alignment and sometimes a personal alignment. Can we work together? Have we got the personalities that will do hard things together, but that will help grow teams, that will help make sure that the people who work with us trust us, that they will get better and stronger, that we will build a vision that they can deliver against and that they will become better as part of what we're building. That bit is the harder bit. I think the finding, the alignment, the trust, that's not easy, especially when you don't know people. And then can you have fun doing it? Most executive leaders do not have I don't know any that have a normal 9-to-5 existence. They work phenomenally hard, just like the teams they work with. But finding people you can do that with and trust and that will be there in hard times and figure it out with you or for you or you for them. But also you can laugh and you can find the enjoyment in the next phase of the journey, I think can sometimes be underestimated as well, because it's a tense time building a company to the 100%. Next phase.
I do. I think you make such an excellent point, one I talk about a bit, which is that at the end of the day, this is people we're talking about.
Yes.
It's not a machine you're going to work for, you know, and it's run by people whom, like all of us, have our own version of, you know, fraud, you know, syndrome, you know, imposter syndrome. And, you know, they're brilliant people who've taken something a little bit maybe further than they expected. And, you know, then I wanted to go further. And I'm about to hand the keys over to this person who has all these skills. And, you know, there's so much on this. It's aside from the character stack and talent stack and skill stack and competency stack, which is one thing that you just said. It's also the leadership skills, which is more of a softer personality skill. How does this person run things? Yeah. There's so much communication that's going to be required in this role, and relationship management in this role, and managing all sorts of different types of relationships and things, and dealing with stress and decision making and risk taking. And then there's, like you said, do I want to work with this person or not? You know,
will I follow them? Will I believe in them? Will I do more than I ever thought I could because I enjoy it, because I believe in it?
Yeah. And so, you know, we're when you're on both sides of that equation and you're entering into an engagement about the role, if both people are thinking about these things with the level of granularity that we are, there's a greater outcome that's positive from it than not. And I think that unfortunately we focus on things that are a little easier to attain or more superficial, or we want to ignore potential issues because we'd rather not deal with them. All the human stuff that goes into these sort of things. And I do think also that the instances I've seen where CROs work out really well, many times it's an accident. You know, I didn't know it was going to go this great. I mean, I took a flyer on this person. My gut felt good about it. And it, God bless, Grania is amazing. I mean, she was amazing, you know. And for me to like try and reverse engineer my process is like, I don't know. I liked her. You know, she was really smart and she got it, you know, and she had certain things that I thought worked and it worked out. And so I don't know if there is a sort of a playbook, but there's definitely a checkbook, you know, of sorts, right? Like if you were to maybe think about that, like what would be, if you're hiring a chief revenue officer and you're at that stage that you and I agree, it's, you're at this sort of operational inflection point, da, 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 da. What might be ways that you'd say, all right, what are the things I know are must-haves for me to consider this person?
I think strength of character and ability to lead is key. How have they led other people? How have other people reacted to their leadership? Have they achieved things in prior roles that were hard in a positive way, without breaking teams, without breaking relationships, in a positive can-do growth fashion? So how they built other leaders, how they did all of that achievement in terms of the nuance of leadership, the nuance of leaders. What would those leaders say about their path working with that person? What did they achieve together? How did they achieve it together? How did they challenge teams to be better? What new initiatives, processes, automation, solutions, revenue streams, what did they do that they never thought they could in those prior roles? I think that's one good indicator, how people react and what they built together. I think examples of challenges that were presented to them through their careers and how they took those on, or examples of challenges that weren't presented to them that they saw in companies that even though they weren't in a leadership role, they took the bull by the horns and decided, ooh, that needs fixing. I don't need the title. I don't need the praise. I don't need the ego pat on the back to fix it. Why? Because my personality is to build, drive, succeed, and help those around me do the same. They tend to be natural leaders who gravitate towards unblocking things for company success. And I think if you have conversations with people who have that, it tends to be a good indicator of what they can do no matter what they're asked to achieve next. Then there are pragmatic things in terms of knowledge and skill sets around sales ops, rev ops, forecasting, predictability, all of the checks and boxes that are not soft, that are meaningful. What processes they've put in place, how they've rolled out sales talent approaches in terms of growing whatever it is they were growing at a stage in their career. So I think those things are indicative of, do they succeed? Do they find the problem? Do they remove the problem? Do they help people grow as well as the company grow?
Got it. Really good stuff. So I'm curious about something now. I want to switch gears a bit to your situation because I want to understand a little bit. So you mentioned C-suite. Is there a CMO at your company?
There's not a CMO. There's a director of global marketing who's phenomenal.
And they report into you?
Yes.
Okay. So here's the question for you. What would a chief revenue officer do in a situation where they're being brought on to run the whole revenue team, but there is in existence a chief marketing officer?
Collaborate. Understand what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. It is not a given that a CRO should own marketing. I see it 50-50. In some cases they do, in some cases they don't. I prefer the cases where they do, because it's a very clear vision that also includes your market position, your how the market feel about you. But it's not exclusive. You can join a company where there's a chief marketing officer who is very talented. She or he has a very clear vision of the market positioning, but maybe not all of the other elements in terms of sales ops and rev ops and what products we're going to sell and what solutions we're going to deliver and how we will competitively position against somebody. But they have the talent in terms of what that looks like, and they have the lead generation engine and the inbound and the outbound and all of the things. So it's not mutually exclusive that they can exist beside each other versus reporting. I prefer, my personality is one that likes marketing, that likes the positioning of what we're driving, but it's not an absolute necessity. And I have CRO colleagues who are in orgs, and again, 50-50, some who own and some who don't. But I think the key with any C-suite collaboration is that collaborating and understanding what each member of that leadership team is tasked with delivering and doing, and how you need to cross-functionally align.
Got it. Yeah, I see this as a, you make a point I like before, which is it is sort of 50-50.
Yeah.
I agree with you that I think, you know, if optimally the CRO should sort of run, not own, but own, you know, those departments from a responsibility standpoint, but they should have a functional leader who's in charge of it, no doubt. Exactly. And it sounds like you have that situation, but I have a lot of clients who they're in a situation where they have a CMO, and yeah, clearly, you know, collaboration is obviously the route that is the correct direction, but it's not easy, right? Sometimes the CMO is getting a direction from the board or the CEO to make marketing decisions that are not in line with what the CRO wants to have happen from a cross-functional standpoint. And having those discussions can be difficult. I think the MQL and all that stuff, it's sort of kind of become a bit of a ghost. And I think marketing is going through a big shift in the B2B space right now because of this. And it's an interesting, I asked the question mainly because it just comes up so often. Many times too, I get a lot of, you know, I've sort of provocatively put out there that I think that if I were to be really doctrinaire about this, I'd say that B2B companies, while they need certainly have to have a robust and excellent marketing function, it's best that they don't have a CMO for the reasons that you and I are discussing it, that there's a CRO and there's a more revenue leadership function as opposed to a, right? And it would solve certain problems from that standpoint, because it would be a little bit more of a, like an integrated leadership.
And I think what you do need in cases like that is you need phenomenally talented marketing leadership.
Yep.
Who truly understand the depth of marketing, of lead gen, demand gen, conversion, as well as all of the marketing tech stacks that go into it, the alignment with the sales tech stacks, the positioning, the product marketing, the corporate marketing. There's so much that goes into marketing that you talk about misunderstood roles. I think it's another one that is often understood in different ways, depending on an executive team's direct experience with it, because it's detailed. It's no longer just, as you say, the MQL is dead. It's so much more than that. It's so more complicated, and it's a phenomenal area. And whether it's standing on its own with a CMO or whether it's part of a CRO org, you need the understanding. Whoever is driving that needs the understanding of what the engine should do, because it is an engine, no more than a revenue engine, a sales engine. It's an engine that I think is important to understand and align, so that everybody knows what they should and shouldn't expect and what their role in it is.
Yep, agreed. Well, great. So I just want some final thoughts as we get close to the time here. What's next? Like when you think about your role and it evolves and your company becomes more complicated and bigger, do you see the CRO role? what sort of changes does the CRO role need to take as the company gets larger and larger? And when is it time for like a, you know, software upgrade or a rehaul, overhaul of the way the role is defined? Because it's not, it can't stay the same. It's an interesting role in that it sort of evolves. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
So I think revenue growth and when a company reaches a point that the smoothness and predictability of revenue delivery has few, if any, issues, you've achieved nirvana. You've got all of the various elements smoothly going. You've got product delivering what it needs to, SaaS delivering what you need to, solutions delivering what they need to. There's the right capacity, cost of sales, cost, total cost of ownership of revenue. Then you question, and it depends on what your corporate strategy is. Is it to exit? Is it to sell? Is it to grow further? What that looks like, I think, helps define what's next in terms of your growth as a company more than your growth as a CRO. But I think one of the big things that a CRO should be looking at as they reach that point is what teams they've built that can enable the journey, even if they're not there. Mm-hmm. How smooth the processes are, how easy a company can get data and tell what the predictability is, what the 1 month, 3 month, 6 months, 9 months projection is, how likely you are to have X left over to do this, this, and this. I think if you're getting to that point, you've done several years and you've really built something phenomenal that leaves your executive team and your board with choices on what to do. When you're still in that building phase, there's so much to do till you get to that smoothness. So it really depends. It depends on the strategy. How do I think the role will evolve in general? AI, huge part of it. And not just AI for the role and AI for the processes and AI for every tool set you ever have, every process you ever have, doing more with less, but also what your company does in terms of its AI solutions and visions in their own products and services. Building that as a huge part of the next few years and moving past the hype to pragmatic approaches to AI enablement and AI success.
That's going to be such a huge part of this, I know.
Huge.
And I know it's kind of talked about almost ad nauseum, you know, it's ridiculous, but it is for a reason.
Yep.
I mean, I'm an old salt and I'm using this stuff, you know. Yep. I find myself utilizing it and I'm seeing it's getting better and better. It's far from perfect, but I'm seeing already like, wow, it saved me a lot of time just now.
Efficiency gains are phenomenal.
Totally.
In research, in setting up your pipeline, in analysis and predictability, and it will get better. I think that also brings the question though, when you ask what the future is, it also drives the question, not necessarily just of the CRO role, but of the type of hires that the CRO is making, the type of company hires you make in the future. How AI enabled are they? What does that look like in terms of skill set changes for the sales team, the field sales team, for sales ops and rev ops, for solutions? Does that change the talent profile, the skill profile? And I think that it's going to change more so than the CRO, but your CRO also needs to be very passionate about technology and next phase enablement and AI enablement. Otherwise, I think any company without that in its senior leadership team will struggle.
Yeah, agreed. Really great. Well, look, thank you. I have a follow-up. One little last question I'd like to ask, and that is, so you're really good at this job. You're obviously an expert. Do great. You got a nice profile and you're working in a great situation where all your skills are being utilized. If you were in a situation where you didn't have to work anymore, what would you do?
Oof. I find it hard to imagine a situation where I wouldn't want to work. There's a difference between not having to.
You'd and be able to pick whatever you want though.
You can pick the fun consult. So I definitely think the fun helping private equity companies manage the companies that they acquire to get to the phase of, oh crap, I don't know how to engage with my board. Oh crap, I don't know how to prepare appropriately for the next phase of my company's development. So sitting in between that board and company and helping those companies get to maturity get to that next phase of growth and comfort in terms of how they engage. That's a huge passion. So I really like that, knowing that you're solving a problem for both a board that acquires companies, private equity firm, but also for a CEO and their leadership team, where you're bringing it to the next phase. And I think that's a passion. So doing engagements like that, where you take the expertise you've had in building a career and applying it to that, hugely rewarding. Plus gardening and beach and travel.
There you go. Gardening always comes up. Gardening and animals.
Yeah.
I hear baking. Baking too. I get a lot of baking.
Yeah, no, I'm not a really good baker. I like eating them, not so much baking them. But definitely the ability to apply the skills you have to passionately help others grow, and the private equity side of things fascinates me from both perspectives. So acquiring something that drives value and will you get your return on investment, but also from the founder's perspective, being able to get to that next phase positively. So doing gigs like that and balancing it with the fun of nature and gardening, always good.
God bless. Well, yeah. Thank you. As I expected, this was a really great conversation. And I love to speak to people that are so philosophically aligned. It's a pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the CRO Insights podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.